comes from heart. Feel the petrol potion, the strength for your danger. Lonely I've been telling, sorrow is a spell.
Я живу. Дом как дом, крыша как крыша, труба. И вообще разные мелочи по хозяйству. Алеша пашет, Маруся боронит, ребята играют. А я, о несчастный, я целый день пишу. Романы, пьесы, рассказы, стихи. Работаю, товарищи. Впрочем, вечерком я рыбак. Налимы, луки, окуни, ярши, бестозобы. Честное слово, товарищи. Каждый день хлебаю уху. А если да, отличная погода, ха-ха, на пылу, пыла река, постил рыбака, как бы жить в колосе хорошо, тишина в колосе, мешает душе, хорошей. Гомонки слез, кинутся блёстки, поставленные уды, ощуп. Плюнет, дёрг, кокнут и дёрг, подтекают, ощуп. Уважаю рыбачить, полковник и этим мастера. Эта история продолжается до 1 августа, до открытия охоты. Ну, утра охота, ха-ха, тут чёрт возьми, вот жизнь. Хлеб, котомку, за пояс чайник, позвал собаку, и айда, ружьем, куда? Понятно, на дикие озера, кустом, подаю, трактом, тракт, 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 трет, где нас, где надо, где нас, так, 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 мимо. Избы, люди, кони, лес, поля, луга. Оп, 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 ага, оп, оп, на месте, лоб. Пожалуйста. Тут озеро как колыбель, и голубой глубинь. Камыши дорожат, камыши не дорожат, тишина такая, будто и нет никого. Камыши утянулась собака, пульты ищет, ищет, ищет. Вдруг это самое сырое, нежное воздухе. Вот. Собака. Вот. Собака в зубах выносит на берег утку. Слово буль-буль. Слово. Слово. Поймай. Вижу. Бас. Кончено. Солнце село. Словенский стой. Месяц в небе звездный стер. Я под лицей на подпой. Третий тайный друг костер. Дремлется лес. А мне не спится, я бы мысли дымом нес к облакам, как колесница, что бы думал, что бы слушал тих, стал бы озером, без шума слушать ночь камыш. Да, близко нашись, это не тот погрит, и без озер я фантазер, а усу, капу. А в сущности, не зря серьезно говоря, не вижу разницы. Есть с тобой и в том, и то и с тобой, что в одиночестве лесов высветит весь бизнес свой. Так вот раздумаю костра, пишу я другу. Да, жизнь сестра, но каменка мой философский угол. Что каменка? Еловый дом, еловые и крыши, но гордость мудрости тут в том, что под еловой кровлей, под этой деревенской крышей живет американских небоскребов выше организованная бодрость бытия. Вот царствую под липой ружьишком у костра. Не жизнь, а рай. Дело даже не выдирай. Либо-либо, как говорится, да. Друг, жизнь сестра. Привольное тепло приемничек под липой. Пес и озеро спит. Ночь молотит, туман опал, рубин на заре, и слышится кляк в Москве. Аля.
De kracht van Radio Patapou ligt in zijn zendbereik.
This is the Memory Palace. I'm Nate DeMeo. The mind would wander. How could it not in the mill? 12, 14 hours a day. Same chattering machines. Chattering co-workers. Same smells. Same flat winter light. Tufts of cotton. Flecks of thread. Reds and browns and blues, airborne on the cold draft coming through the gap between the window pane and the red brick. The clack and shush of the looms, same rough tug of soft cotton on calloused fingers as you built another bolt of cloth, thread by thread, moment by moment, day after day after day after day after. The minds of the women in the mill would wander as their eyes would drift to the window, to the low-hanging clouds, to the deer tracks in the snow and the ice and the river that rolls just below and turns the wheel and turns the gears of the loom that you have to get your mind back to right now so the machine doesn't jam, so you don't hurt yourself, so you don't forget for a moment those movements you can feel in your sleep, the rough tug of soft cotton on calloused fingers. Yet the mind wouldn't wander and wonder if there was a better life for you. Wonder at how the few dollars you'd make in a week made up of days that started hours before dawn and ended hours after sunset would ever add up. Would ever buy you more than a book or a brush, some brief distraction brought home in a paper bag. Wonder how you were ever supposed to meet a man to marry, to take you away from the mill, when all you saw all day were women and men you weren't allowed to speak with, lest your mind start wandering, as it was right now. Back to the machine, to the chattering and the chattering, day after day, and on and on and on. Margaret Knight's mind would wander. How could it not? She was 12, and new to this mill downriver from Manchester, New Hampshire. Maybe it would wander to her mother, out there in the cold, left to attend to the farm on her own, since Margaret's father died. Was it better in here? At least there was the warmth of other bodies in the benches, despite their chattering. At least there were the tufts of cotton, the colored flecks of thread, flurrying about the room, pretty in their way. But she would have been told by the other girls and women not to let her mind wander, to keep her head down, keep her eyes on her work. Don't worry about the rough tug of soft cotton on soft fingers. The calluses would come, but her mind would wander. Back to school. She loved school. But those days were over now. Back to the wooden toys she would make for herself. the sled she would design and build for her brothers, that they'd all take down the hill by the farm on days like this, before she came to work in the mill. Her mind would wander. But she was alert enough to see one day a woman working her loom and see the shuttle, the metal piece that wove the thread between the warp and the weft, shoot out across the room and tear into a man's face and drop him to the ground. She saw him taken away, saw someone clean up the blood, and heard the looms resume their chattering. That night, Margaret's mind wandered back to the day, to the man on the ground, to the blood on the floor, and the machines whose movement she had come to know so quickly, and whose parts she could picture so clearly, and take apart in her head, move them around, understanding intuitively how one was connected to another. What would happen if those connections changed? She could do that. She probably didn't quite realize how rare of a thing it was to be able to do that. For how many people had she met in her 12 years who could? How many people there at the mill would have had a moment to notice it? How many teachers would have thought to cultivate it in New Hampshire in 1850 in a girl? Somehow, though, someone at the mill took Margaret Knight seriously when she came in with a wooden object, an invention she'd come up with when her mind was wandering, and caused the machines to stop automatically when something went wrong. And somehow, her device became standard in all looms for decades to come. Not that Margaret Knight profited from it, and it is easy to guess why. Her family likely knew nothing of patents, of what those numbers meant on those machines Margaret could take apart in her head. Margaret certainly hadn't been taught about them. She was a girl. History loses track of this girl in the mill. It finds her again as a woman, about 28 years old, working in a paper bag factory in Springfield, Massachusetts. It tells us little about how she spent the years between. It tells us nothing about how it felt to see all those looms outfitted with the safety device of her design, or if her mind ever wandered to wonder about the money some man had made selling it to all those mill owners, while she herself was turning hours of her life into pennies and slowly stitching them into dollars. But even without the benefit of the historical record, I can fairly safely tell you what she did during all those lost years. She worked. And in 1867, she spent nearly every hour of nearly every day folding and gluing and cutting paper. Or just folding. Or folding and cutting, but not gluing. History doesn't seem to have written down precisely what went down in the Columbia Paper Bag Factory of Springfield, Massachusetts. But we know the rules were the same as they had been in the textile mill. Keep your head down. Don't let your mind wander. And we know she couldn't help it. For 2 years, Margaret Knight's mind would wander to a single idea, a machine with gears and cranks. She'd put the pieces together in her head while she sat and folded and/or glued and/or cut. She'd turn it around, reassemble the pieces, try it again. And at night or at lunch, she'd take a pencil and paper. There was certainly plenty of paper around, and put the idea down. The foreman of the mill complained, told her to keep her head down and keep her mind on her work. But at home, she took some wood and took that idea, a paper bag making machine, and built it in miniature. And then she sent it off to a machinist in Boston to make a model with tiny gears that, when turned, could turn a tiny sheet of paper into a tiny paper bag. But when she went to send the model and her drawings and application to the patent office, she was told not to bother. An identical machine had already been submitted and was about to be approved. So Margaret went to a lawyer, and they figured out that a man in the machine shop had seen her model and was so impressed that he made his own and passed it off as his own. The lawyer also told her that it would cost her $100 a day to take this to patent court. He may well have pointed out that that was as much as 10 times as she made in a week. But Margaret Knight had spent her life working at jobs she couldn't have liked, keeping her head down, being told not to let her mind, that remarkable mind of hers, wander, turning hours into pennies and stitching them into dollars. What would she spend it on, if not this? So for 16 days and $1,600, Margaret Knight fought for her patent number. The argument of the man who stole her design was that it had to be his design, as he was a he. This was a complicated, ingenious machine beyond the intellectual capacity of any woman, never mind a woman who folded and or cut and or glued paper bags for a living. Well, Margaret White took the stand, showed the patent judge her notes, showed them her wooden model, told him how it all worked, told him how perhaps only a woman who had folded and cut and glued paper bags all day, every day, would be so driven to invent a machine that would free her from the folding and the cutting and the gluing. And she won, and was issued patent number 116,842, the first American patent issued to a woman in the 19th century. She licensed her device to a paper bag company in Connecticut for $2,500, and for $25,000 in royalties. It was enough to pay her legal bills, but more importantly, it was enough to let her mind wander. When the New York Times caught up with her in 1913, she was 70 years old and happily at work at her 89th invention. She would die the next year. Historians aren't quite sure whether that number is accurate, the 89 inventions. Some suggest it could have been many more. She appears to have patented 22 of them. An automatic tool for boring or planing cylindroidal surfaces, an internal combustion engine, a rotary engine, a skirt protector. People note that she never married. Okay. Maybe she didn't want to. Maybe she never found the right man. One who could fit into this life that she was inventing for herself. Maybe it wasn't a man she wanted at all. The one thing we're sure of is that she didn't need one. People also note the mere $300 she had to her name at the time of her death, and note the distinction between the estate of a woman the papers called the female Thomas Edison and that of the male Thomas Edison. But I will note that she may not have needed a fortune, with no heirs, in a nice home in a nice neighborhood, with space in which to create, and time for her mind to wander.
Boom, 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 boom.
Oh, De NTR presenteert De Spin. Een radiocrimi in 70 delen. Geïnspireerd op de IRT-affaire.
Zie wel en wat mag ze niet bij het opsporen van criminelen.
Korps in discrediet is gebracht.
Aflevering 29. Serieus talent.
Gijs Korsteling wilde koste wat kost achter Armin aan. Jacqueline had al eerder geprobeerd achter de schermen iets te regelen, maar het was klaarblijkelijk niet genoeg geweest. We hadden maar één uitweg gezien. Hogerop gaan. We hadden de bewijzen van corruptie in Amsterdam rechtstreeks gemeld bij de procureur en de hoofdofficier. Maar we wisten nog altijd niet of dat genoeg was om Gijs terug in het hok te krijgen. Sas? Sas? Sas, ben jij dat? Meisje, wat is er gebeurd?
Dit.
Ah, je rapport.
Al die extra studieuren, die stomme huiswerkbegeleider, die is allemaal super geholpen. Alleen maar voldoende.
Jezus, Sas.
En je weet wat dat betekent, hè, pap? Oh. Je weet wat je beloofd hebt over die wedstrijden, hè?
Wedstrijd, enkelvoud, dat is wat ik heb gezegd.
Nou.
Daarna? Nee. Daarna zien we wel verder.
Wat kon ik genieten van de eenvoud van mijn dochter? Met al die dubbelzinnigheden om me heen.
Wat ik feitelijk doe is een netwerk voor je bouwen. Een netwerk van bedrijven. Sommige gelieerd, andere niet.
Ik ben de baas van al deze papiertjes.
Je bent een meervoudig ondernemer, ja.
Wat?
Een meervoudig ondernemer. Je moet je kapitaal spreiden.
Als het niet uitkomt, dan kan ik ook later...
Nee. Kijk, naast je sportschool dacht ik aan horeca. En iets van een vastgoedportefeuille en misschien nog een paar offshore bedrijven.
Horeca?
Ja, dat is een hele veilige investering. Maar als het je niet bevalt, kunnen we ook kijken naar...
Een nailstudio.
Sorry, een...
Een nailstudio.
Een nailstudio?
Ja.
Ja, natuurlijk, ja, dat... Dat kan, een nieuw studio. Waarom niet, hè? Hoewel ik met het oog op de huidige...
Het is niet voor mij, het is voor Lea. Mevrouw.
Ah.
Ik moet haar een beetje...
Paaien.
Nou ja, zorgen dat ze dingen te doen heeft.
Ja, een nieuw studio is misschien wat onconventioneel, maar alles kan. Als je het maar goed regelt...
Joke!
Vier Schoener Direkte.
Thank you. Frederik Heidemann og William Kudal sidder klar bag radiosenderne, klar bag mikrofonerne til at sende en omgang dugfriske kulturnyheder fra Aarhus. Vi sender altså direkte fra Aarhus C og har fyldt mappen op med en god bunke musik og hvad der ellers hører sig til. Her blev du lige før spillet ind med et præludie af Kelly Malone, og den næste times tid eller halvanden, der vil altså følge en række andre gode sager forhåbentlig. Hvordan har du det, Frederik?
Jeg har det dejligt, tak.
Det er godt at høre. Og nu vil vi altså fortsætte med et andet stykke musik, og det kommer.
Support, as well as in Mexico and Puerto Rico after the earthquakes and hurricanes there. If we miss something important or to include something in a future episode, shoot us an email at podcast@crimethink.com. A full transcript of this episode with plenty of useful links can be found at our website, crimethink.com/podcast. You can subscribe to The Hotwire on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also listen to us through the new anarchist podcast network, Channel Zero. We also want to mention that we've been careful to keep our show radio-friendly. Unlike the regular ex-worker podcast, that means The Hotwire doesn't include curse words, which is a real darn tootin' bummer. But hopefully that allows some motivated listeners to get our show out on the airwaves where it can reach people that wouldn't encounter it otherwise. It could also allow...
or really tired. I don't know. We kind of started our morning with getting arrested because we're in a house in Cologne that was occupied for a week. And it was really nice because it was a very strong queer feminist space, and there's not so many house occupations in Cologne. I think the last one was 3 years ago. And it was there for a week. It got evicted violently, and very like the cops just stormed in this morning, and we kind of came out of the situation, and 7 people got arrested. Everyone is free now, but it was really fucked up, and I don't want to get anywhere. I just wanted to tell you this, and you do whatever you want with it. I don't have a revolutionary statement except that squatting is fucking awesome and that cops fucking suck.
Yeah. They don't even suck.
Okay.
And also, last night I sliced my hand open with a bread knife.
Which was very also fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did bets on how many stitches there were.
Maybe you can also take bets on how many stitches I got.
And also, that's the reason why they play 100 harmonica instead of 200 banjo. But that's life. Next song is called Farewell to the Crowds from Chumbawamba.
Support, as well as in Mexico and Puerto Rico after the earthquakes and hurricanes there. If we miss something important or to include something in a future episode with plenty of useful links can be found at our website, crimethink.com/podcast. You can subscribe to The Hotwire on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also listen to us through the new Anarchist Podcast Network, Channel Zero. We also want to mention that we've been careful to keep our show radio-friendly. Unlike the regular ex-worker podcast, that means The Hotwire doesn't include curse words, which is a real darn tootin' bummer. But hopefully that allows some motivated listeners to get our show out on the airwaves where it can reach people that we... Or to include something in a future episode, shoot us an email at podcast@crimethink.com. A full transcript of this episode.
Like Driving van Strijfin Junko van op het gelijknamige album. En we blijven nog half in Noorwegen met Jessica Slichter. Ze is half Noors, half Nederlands. En haar album heet Polycrisis Yes. Een soort van sombere visie op het Europese samenwerkingsmodel. Macabre elektronica met flarde stem. The Dream is Dead van Jessica Slichter.
Embarrassed by